on ABC Radio.
This is The Big Fish
with Scott Levi.
Ahoy there, welcome aboard another great edition of The Big Fish. First up, modifying lures. Frankenstein lures with Joe Starling. Matching the hatch with soft plastics and other lures. A very clever trick. And coming up, Stinker. He's been attacked by a giant kingfish. We'll find out all about that. A problem most of us would love, but not him. He's a strange cat. And also on the way, Craig McGill with a really innovative way to fish bait for giant mulloway. It'll blow your mind. All coming up on The Big Fish. It's The Big Fish, and a really interesting topic for you this morning. Have you ever chopped and changed? Have you ever modified a lure? For fly fishers, it's the way to go. You tie your flies, you dabble with different materials, you get the scissors out and you modify them on the stream. There are lots of things you can do. It's a really creative game, but it doesn't happen that often with lures. But Joe Starling was sitting on the dock of her local estuary the other day. The water was crystal clear. And you might want to see the YouTube clip on Starlo's fishing site. And the salmon were buzzing this huge school of bait fish. And they were very selective. And so Jo did something that you won't see that often. She got the scissors out and she started to create there on the wharf. Good morning, Jo.
Oh, good morning. How are you, Scott?
I'm really well. That was a fascinating episode of Starlo's YouTube channel. And what you did was something that fly fishers do all the time, but lure fishers very rarely. Take us back to that Frankenstein's concoction that you came up with that really did match the hatch.
It's a thing that we've done quite a bit on the water. When I was up in the territory living up there, we used to quite often, because the barra would just tear our squidgies apart, and so we would quite often take a butter knife with us, you know, bread and butter knife, and have that in the boat and a lighter. And what you can do is weld them back together by heating up your knife and putting it on the flat edge of both pieces and sticking them back together and holding them tight for a while, and that can actually weld them back together. And of course, me being a creative, I used to talk about Frankenstein lures. I used to create some absolute freaks using the curly tails added to this and that, and linking lots of things together and creating all manner of things. And they all used to catch. You know, they do different things in the water than what any of the fish had seen yet, and create different sonic signatures and bits and bobs. Some were an absolute failure and others led to other designs that we came up with. But in any case, I've been mucking around for a very, very long time with these things. And yes, it was actually watching Steve have good success with the lure that he was using, and but as it came in, it was twice the size of the bait fish. And you know, as a fly fisher, you sort of got it drilled into you that you need to match the hatch.
Right, a little surf candy would have been just perfect.
It would have been just perfect indeed. And these particular new lures that have come out look remarkably like a little surf candy, but they are soft and flexible and pliable, and they've actually got what looks like sparkle or
sort of like optic fibre coming out of the tail, isn't it?
Yeah, similar to flash that we put in our flies. But in any case, it's not all the way through the body, which is sort of a casting plug or just a baitfish, tubular baitfish sort of look, all circular. So I, took the head off, kept the eyes. I could have just cut it down, but I did like the idea of that it had glowing eyes. And so instead of just cutting it down and putting half the plastic on, which a lot of us do when we want a smaller profile, I instead just cut the middle section out so that I could have the head with the eyes, and then put the remainder, a smaller piece, well measured, onto the back of the jig head. So what I would say to people in doing it, certainly super glue or the idea of the welding knife would have been better, but I didn't have those with me at the time. But I did make sure I had a jig head that had a plastic keeper on it. So if people have a look at their jig.
Those ones with the little hook bit.
Little hooks.
So good.
Yeah.
They're the ones that Bushy and Stalo lamented the fact that they stopped producing them, and then someone else started making them again in the exact same sort of design, similar design. They are crackers with the round head and the little stainless steel piece of wire with a hook on it that holds your plastic up to the head.
Correct.
Yep.
Yes, and there are other styles that came out too to replace the original squidgy ones that Stalo and Bushy designed, and they'll various brands have all manner of sort of various versions of a barb or something like that that are designed to hook into your plastic. But the most important thing, I think, is that you get something that does have something to hold your plastic up. It'll just stop them getting pulled down as regularly. And so what I did with the head is make sure that it was shorter, that I still had the hook on this particular brand out so that the tail could come in. Otherwise, it just would have, every retrieve, it just would have slid down the hook. But, yeah, it was fabulous. And when you see it coming through the water, you can see it's exactly the same size as the other baitfish.
Just
perfect.
Unfortunately,
by the time I decided that that's what I needed to do, the time had passed and the fish had gone off.
That's right. The tide changed. You were sitting there doing your wonderful craft project and really enjoying it and creating this fantastic littler lure that matched the hatch perfectly. And then the tide stopped, the bait ball dispersed, and the action was over. But it was still great fun. I mean, it's the big fish, and we're speaking with Joe Starling about modifying lures. And with soft plastics particularly, you can do that. You can mix and match with spinner baits if you're fishing in the Murray or the Murrumbidgee or one of our cod rivers as well. There are a lot of lures now that you can actually modify quite a lot, aren't there?
There are. One of the fun things I love is that now, what do they call them? Is it the beetle bug or the beetle spin? So it's it looks like the arm of a spinnerbait. So you know that would normally have a fixed head at the bottom of it with the little coat hanger coming up that you tie to, and then the blades buzzing off the back of that. These things are just the actual coat hanger part, and I guess it's sort of like a fast attach sort of mechanism that you just clip into the toe point of another jig head.
Yeah, no, I didn't know about them. I'm just looking at them now. They're really cheap to make your own spinnerbait. They're a great initiative, because really it's you mix and match whatever soft plastic or jig you want to stick on the bottom.
So it means you can go much smaller, or you can have a smaller blade on a bigger presentation if for whatever reason you just want to create a little bit of a baitfish sort of glimmer swimming with the other, as opposed to a great big flashy thing. But they're also very, very good for subtle presentation too, because in the cast the whole thing collapses, so it's an articulated option, if you know what I mean. So the jig head is articulated as opposed to fixed. So when it lands, it sort of collapses in and can drift down and then activate upon on the actual pull. So I've done quite well in shutdown bass dams and things like that when I'm in tournaments by switching over to that particular concept. So I just love anything that allows me to mix and match, you know. And the other thing that's really cool with the fly tying vice is another along this same theme, I'm having a little bit of a play with some of the gear that Steve's son makes, and he's got what's called a worm burner. So it's it actually is a 3D printed version of a, you know how people in fishing for whiting and things like that, they used to put like a piece of red straw.
Yeah, a little red tubing, yes, above the hook. Yeah.
So it's like that, but it's shaped like the eating and walking end of a beach worm.
Right? Oh, brilliant. This sounds great to me, because I've always been seeking someone who could replicate the squirt worm on the flats.
Yes.
Because this is what they're hunting, and their eyes are so sharp, and they are looking for that and eating them by the thousand and not really turning on to even your beach worm bait. You know, if you could replicate the top end of a squirt worm poking out of the sand, it would be the greatest breakthrough in the history of the world.
Well, this is what I was trying to do. Exactly. You and I think so alike. So what I did was I took one of these, what he calls a worm burner, into my fly tying room and measured it up, because I had some game changer fish spines, you know, fly spines from when I was going barra fishing. And so I measured one up that would fit enough through the hole, because it's, you know, it's not a flexible material, it's not like a soft plastic, and poked that through. And then I put got a little cheb weight, and I attached that to the sand end, not the head end, and at the head end of the fly tying spine, I attached a treble, but only after I dressed it. So I put the treble into my fly vise and I dressed it with some marabou, red marabou, and some red dubbing that has, it's an Australian product, has little rubber bits in it too, so that it's really mobile. And just dressed that lightly around the treble. And so the treble is, you know how some squirt worms and all of that, they'll project their guts, or they'll do the I don't know what it is.
So they do a little bit of net fishing sometimes, don't they? They create little bit of a sort of a
thing that comes out of their mouth.
Yeah, catching net sort of thing to catch microscopic plankton and stuff. Yeah.
So it's like that. And what I also did was I got a little bit of one of my tungsten beads from my fly tying kit, and I put that around at the head end as well, so that I've got weight at the cheb end, so the tail end that's going to is a bit heavier and sits down lower. But I wanted, this is quite small, and so I wanted to be able to cast it with my spin gear. Anyway, so I had a bit of a play around with that, and I've caught flatty, and I've caught brim, and a number of things in its first outing. I actually was hoping to catch some whiting, but I haven't got...
It's caught everything but the target species by the sound of it. Well, those worm burners are a great idea, but they're to sort of use above a natural worm, a blood worm or a tube worm or a beach worm, aren't they? They're there to sort of enhance the bait to give you, you know, because they're really expensive. Now, if you want to buy those tube worms, the ones that are closest to blood worms, which you can't harvest anymore, it's too damaging to the environment to dig them, isn't it?
Yes, that's right. And yes, these are meant to be on a bait. And so when I sent photos of my flatty and my brim to my son Tom, he just said, "Wait a minute, did you have bait on that?" And I said, "No, I was using it as a lure." So he's absolutely fascinated. But it just comes down to the fact that it's using your lateral thought. And I will tell you this, I might send you one, Scott, because when I retrieve it, So it's got a little bit of weight. It's not coming back on the surface. It's subsurface. But when you retrieve it with speed, it sort of skims around the place, and it does look for all the world just like a little squirt worm.
Yeah, brilliant. I hope it works for you.
I reckon it'd be even better if I was going for that particular retrieve, if I dressed the head end with white or creamy coloured stuff, as opposed so that it's like what the squirt worms do when they're fertilising.
Those little Peter Morse whiting flies, they are deadly. The whiting just can't get enough of those. Speaking of which, Joe Starling is with us talking about modifying lures, and more you're seeing it too, walking the dog lures with those plastic frondy bits at the back and the assist hooks, and they're red and all the rest of it. So a lot of people are doing it. It's the new innovation. A lot of freshwater lures as well, jigs that you add a soft plastic to the end or a skirt. They're starting to really take hold, that beetle rig you mentioned. But that takes us on to our next topic of discussion, Joe Starling, on The Big Fish, is your next event with the Women's Recreational Fishing League is a whiting event. I don't think there's ever been a whiting competition. I know you'll have mixed bag comps, but just purely targeting whiting. Is that right? Or it's a more of a sort of a learning experience?
Well, our X Factor tournaments are all about helping girls build confidence in areas that they possibly wouldn't. So it's about moving girls through the layers to become a tournament angler, and we take them right from first fishing experience all the way through to becoming a mentor, which means they've got their boat license now and they're boating and learning as they go, and then eventually they do what Top 10 Karen did and move on to the actual open tournaments. So in fact, we've lost Karen. She's not coming this time around because she's got a conflicting tournament in the open. So we're very excited about the trajectory we put our women on. But one of the girls who have come through right from the early days of learning to tie knots is now a mentor. And she said to us at the last one, I'd love to do a tournament on whiting because I've never chased them. So that's the, I guess, level of safety, confidence or security that we're able to provide the women, that they can stretch themselves that much without fear of being made fun of. So we stepped up and said, sure, we can do that. And, yeah, it's next weekend. We're having a whiting tournament here with mentors and mentees, so boaters and non-boaters, all women, going out and exploring new waterways and new ways of fishing. And to this day, the girl who requested it still hasn't caught a whiting, but she's going to be one of the boaters. There's still so much more to learn. And so just because she's now boating doesn't mean that she's stopped her learning journey. And so she's still consistently putting the challenges in front of herself and going out to do it. But it's the lovely thing about the ethos that we have in the league, and the reason that we've built it is it's a no ridicule environment, and so the girls can feel very, very safe in trying and learning to succeed. No such thing as failure, as you know. It's just as we go, we learn, and they can do so safely regardless of where they are sitting in the tribe.
Well, fail just stands for, as my little niece Ruby said in Townsville the other day, as a keen fisher woman as well, first attempt in learning.
Oh, I do love that. So ask Ruby if I can steal that.
You can have it. You can have it. But, you know, fishing for whiting, walk the dog lure presentation, or straight popper fishing is a wonderful thing to do. And if someone just gives you a few tips, and you can watch them as well, because it's quite a technique, isn't it, walking the dog? It's almost like, you know, the old rub your head, pat your tummy.
Oh, look, I'm going to be quite frank with you. I'm not very good at it. I mean, I catch fish doing it, but Steve always says that my dog looks like the poor thing is suffering from epilepsy. It's all over the place and quite erratic. I watch his, and it just does a nice, almost like a flying fish taking off, you know, the perfectly symmetrical path behind it, whereas mine will go two steps to the right and about three to the left. Maybe it's just drunk. I don't know.
Well, it's all rhythm and timing, really, doing a good walk the dog retrieve, and it's absolutely deadly. But yeah, it is an interesting form of fishing, because what you do on your end of the line really has a huge impact on the action of the lure. You're imparting the action. Many lures have built-in action, don't they? Whether it's a squidgy with a wriggler tail or a paddle tail, or a bibbed minnow or something, or even a surface lure with a cupped face. You know, they've all got their own built-in action, but the action is imparted by the angler in walking the dog. So it is a bit of a skill. It's a rhythm thing, I think, really.
It is a rhythm thing, and I was really watching it the other day because I wanted to. I wanted to be like Steve. I wanted to be able to.
Don't we all? Don't we all, Joe?
I wanted to have that perfectly symmetrical path back to the boat, and it just does not happen for me. And what I did notice was the angle. You know, because you're bouncing the rod tip, and if I bounce my rod tip towards 9 o'clock, I would get a different action to if I bounced it to 6 or if I bounced it to 7 or 8. It was, and that's just my natural thing because I'm right-handed, so I hold my rod in my right hand, and bouncing it around. And the other thing that I think would make my life easier or improve my action was if I could separate the rhythm of my winding hand to my bouncing hand, so my real hand to my rod hand.
Because that's right. Your rod hand goes, and your real hand stays still. You don't move them both together. It's it's a real acquired skill, and the angle of the rod tip, how far the arc of the rod tip goes, those sorts of things are really important.
They are. But the other thing that I realised is that if you've got a different gearing on your reel, right? So it'll retrieve at a different speed regardless to another reel, for example. And so the fact that my timing of my left hand and my right hand want to work together, which I think is perfectly natural. I just haven't had the skill to separate those two things yet. I need some kind of severance between the nerves in my brain, I think the hemispheres. But if you get it just right with one reel and then you'd go out the next time, you've got a different reel, which happens in my household because of who my husband is, and here you're using this reel today. It changes the gearing ratio, of course, and so the speed that it's retrieving by comparison to the speed that I'm bouncing at, regardless of what I'm doing with my left hand, is changed as well. So
that's a skill. I got so addicted to it in the shallows around my estuaries and the hits, you know, flathead. I love the way flathead do this fantastic explosion take, and they do this beautiful leap through the air in about half a metre of water. They take it in a very similar way, and brim and whiting, that I started to get RSI in my elbow. I started to get that really bad sort of tennis elbow from it. I had to stop and go to the slow rolling, a little chubby, shallow watered hard body, which is a great alternative too. So it's a very addictive form of fishing. Hey, Joe, we've got to leave it there, but thanks so much for talking to us about modifying lures and the big X Factor WRFL event coming up on the Whiting next weekend. Which estuary on the south coast have you chosen there?
We're actually doing it on my home waters, Churros Head Lake. So
was that where the salmon were busting up in the bait school the other day?
Indeed, and it's absolutely glamorous at the moment. It looks so beautiful. So hopefully the conditions hold out and the fish are hungry. Let us hope so.
Let's hope that one of those big salmon doesn't hit the surface popper intended for a 30-centimetre whiting, because that's going to be a bit of fun.
I beg to differ. I hope it does.
Yeah, that's right. Well, you just let them run. You let them run on the flats. That's one great thing about the flats. You know, don't tighten the drag too much, and just let them go.
That's exactly right.
And you'll get them.
Be
patient. Joe, thanks so much for joining us again on The Big Fish. Have a great weekend on the water, and we'll catch you next time.
Yes, thank you so much. I hope you get out for a fish this week.
Have some fun. Tune in before the rising of the sun. Scott Levi on your weekend radio, where their body, how they can
On ABC Radio, this is The Big Fish.
Here comes Tinker with his fishing tips. Some hot advice for your fishing trip. Where to find them? What's the bait?
Are you catching any, mate?
Good morning, Stinker.
Hey, g'day, Scott.
Last week, what a great story. What a great story about the 20-kilo Dewey that you hooked, the boat next door were your mates, the little kid and the older fella, and it took you for a huge run, took the lines, and they reeled it in at the end and gaffed it, and you said, you're going to have it.
That's right. Well, I hooked it. It really hit hard. It is a big fish, and I'm only fishing for squire at the time. And so something like a 20 kilo, well, plus, I think it was 24 kilo, mulloway hits your line and it's set. Your line's set. You're not holding onto it. It's set in the rod holder. And when it hits. And the poor old rod, it just buckles over and the reel squeals and squeals. And then, of course, you've got to battle to get the rod out of the holder and then you're in business. And once I had it under control, or some degree of control, it just didn't give up. Because if you've got a little rod and a light line, you can't apply too much pressure. And if you can't apply pressure, well, they take a long time to tire. But just as it was about to tire, probably its last run, it left me, my boat, and swam over to the other boat anchored 20 metres away from me. Well, what happened, I mentioned it last week, that one of the fishers on board, he was fishing up and down, by the way. He didn't cast out. He was just fishing up and down. He yelled out that he had something. And I'm thinking, I think I know what you got, mate. You got me. Well, it didn't take long for him to winch it to the surface. And, of course, then it rolled on its side. And if you're in a boat where a 25-kilo mulloway rolls on the side, it's quite a sight. And he said, I got it. He said, I got it over here. I said, well, good luck to you. He said, I got a gaff and I'll gaff it. I said, well, beauty, because I haven't got a gaff, so you can have it. I said, I don't want it. You can have it. And they said, are you sure? He said, it's your fish. I said, look, you know, it's your fish. You can have it. And then they took it home and cleaned it up. And then they brought me back four big cutlets that they'd done really professionally, really well done. But the photo I sent you was of a father and son, and they're the Hitchin boys. Now, the Hitchins are a very famous family. If anyone from Gilgandra or the bush knows anything about the Kooi March in the 1915, the First World War, that was William Hitchin was the bloke that started the Kooi March in Gilgandra on their way to the city, gathering those that were going to go off to war. So how interesting is all that? There's a story behind every story, isn't there?
Unbelievable. The famous Captain Bill Hitchin, who started the mighty Kooi March, which all of the people in the bush know about. It was a huge thing back in the First World War. We're speaking with Stinker on The Big Fish. The story's brilliant. You're getting so lazy now. You didn't want to pull the kelic up and go the 20 metres over there to give them that 25 kilo Dewey. You just sent it over there and said, you gaff it, you have it.
That's exactly how it worked out. And they were rather surprised when I said that you can have it. They said, oh, it's a big fish. Surely you want it. And I said, no, I don't want it. You can have it. I used to fish very seriously, or as serious as I can get, for mulloway. But then it just become very obvious to me and my wife that the fish are simply too big. They're just too big for the small. If I had 10 kids, maybe I'd go out and fish for mulloway more often. But I haven't got 10 kids.
No. That's right. And Stinker, that photo, I will get it up. We've had a few problems with publishing, but I'll get that up on our Big Fish podcast site, because there is a picture of the fella you're talking about, the young fella holding it up in the gaff. And it's a mega fish. And they also took a photo of you battling it in your boat because your rod was like a piece of spaghetti. It was touching the water. It was a huge bow in it. So they were watching you fight it. And then all of a sudden you sent it over to them with its last gasp. They dispatched it and they're still eating it, no doubt. But that was at the apple tree. Now, last week you said you were going to try to get out to the outer light for some big snapper if you could. Did you get out there and did you deliver the big snapper that you promised?
Well, I certainly got out there. It all depends on the wind and the swell, Scott. That's the strength of the wind, the direction of the wind, and the height of the swell, and also, to a degree, the direction of the swell. So you've got to line everything up. And if you can then take into consideration the change of tide and maybe sun down or sun up. So there's a few variables that if you get them in line, it pretty much guarantees that you're going to have success. Well, on the particular day that I went, I think it was not long after we spoke last week, maybe in the afternoon. I'm not too sure now. It's a week ago. But anyway, I loaded up Stink Pot and I got everything set up. I checked my lines, put on new gear. I was really confident because it was a bit of south in the wind and I liked that. So off I went, and I went through the apple tree to get to the light, outer lighthouse. You've got to go straight through the apple tree. But the apple tree is only worth fishing in a nor'easter. More north wind, the better when you're fishing in the apple tree, because it's the direction that you sit after you drop the anchor that determines where you actually cast your line. So I've gone through the apple tree, around the southern tip of Fingal Island, and then along the eastern face, which is all sanctuary zone, so you can't, and there's some good fishing to be had in there. Oh, gee, I remember before the sanctuary zone was declared back in 2009, around about then, I used to regularly go there, and it was a great snapper spot. So I call it Wrong Way Reef, and because it's quite odd in that the swell seems to come from all different directions, and it nearly brought me undone on one occasion because I lost concentration and was nearly gobbled up on Wrong Way Reef, and it's easy to do.
It worries me. I'll tell you what, you've got to fish close to those bommies, and the power of those waves when they hump up as a huge towering swell and then they start to heave over and then crash down onto that bommie. But that's the whole point, isn't it? All of the crabs and the pieces of kanji and all the food that gets washed down into the 60-foot gutter and slowly wafts down in the white water to where the hungry snapper are in wait. And that's where your lightly baited prawn or piece of yellowtail comes down as well. And bang-o, you can't miss. And I want to know if you didn't miss. I mean, what happened, Stinker? Did the big snapper play the game?
Well, I got to where I wanted to go, and anchoring is very important. And I've got a good anchor. I've been through a few. There must be half a dozen of my anchors down there somewhere. But anyway, I got this anchor that I'm happy with, and I dropped it where I wanted to drop it, and the wind and the current took me in the direction I wanted to be. And I'm thinking, this is good. I had that feeling. Sometimes you're confident, other times you're not too sure. But I thought, here we go. We're going to rock and roll here. And there's going to be a big snapper just waiting for me. So I took three rods. The reason I take three rods is if I lose all my gear on one rod, then I don't have to re-rig. I just put it aside and then start using the third rod. But anyway, I'm just trying to think. I put a king prawn on one rod and cast it out, and it had no lead, so it was washing around. And then I picked up the second rod, and I'm just about to put a cube of yellowtail on it. Well, wover she goes, screaming and carrying on, and the reel's going, the lines. And I said, you little beauty. I said, I haven't even been there a minute. The bait wasn't in the water for a minute. So I had to put the second rod down and grab the first rod out and lean back. And I said, this is a good fish. And then I'm going the best I can. And I'm thinking, oh, gee, I'm not too sure that this is a snapper. I got closer and closer to the boat, and then it goes again, and goes again and stayed on the surface. And then close to the boat, I look over into the clear water, kingfish. Oh, no, not a kingfish. And then, because I had a lot of bread in the burley bucket, and there's, it's flowing out the back of the boat, and I had some old lobster scraps and prawn heads and all that sort of stuff, which is good for burley. And I looked in the burley trail, and there's three of his mates, all these kingfish just looking. I think, oh, no, would you please leave? And anyway, I got him in, and I have a mate that actually likes to eat kingfish, so I put it in the ice slurry that was really set aside for big snapper, but there's the kingfish in there. And they were good. A legal kingfish, 65-cent a kingfish, that's a big fish. And it takes a fair bit of... They don't like leaving the water, Scott. They like they don't like it on the outside.
Oh, they go so hard, don't they? We're speaking with Stinker on the Big Fish, who was out at his favourite snapper spot only to be mugged by a giant kingfish. And as you say, a legal kingfish is a good fish with that 65-centimetre size limit. But you didn't want them. So how did you cope with that? I mean, did you get down to the snapper or not?
Well, that then there is a real problem. And there's only a couple of ways to around it. And, of course, I threw out the second rod before while I was unhooking the first fish. And you can understand that once the kingfish turn up, it's just mayhem because everything goes crazy. So I'm trying to unhook the first fish when the second line goes off and it's gone crazy. So that was a kingfish too. So I had two kingfish and another three or four, and they're all starting to swim around the boat. They're all sort of, oh, I must have seen, I don't know, six or seven of them swimming around the boat, and I'm trying to avoid them. So what I thought I would do was put on a fair bit of lead, like a big sinker, and hopefully get it under off the surface before the kingfish discovered it. And that worked. It worked for a while. I got one snapper that went a touch over 2 kilo, and then I got another snapper that, well, is not quite as big as that, maybe 2 kilo, which a small snapper for where I was fishing, but still they're very, very welcome in my kitchen. And so I'm just baiting up again for the to go again, and then bang, another king. And then the kingies worked out my trick. They figured out what I was up to, and then I just said, I gave up. I simply gave up. So I come home, I think I caught 4 kingfish and 2 snapper. That's what I got.
Oh, well, it is what it is, Stinker, but you're out there and in amongst it in a great place, and your mate's got a kingfish to eat. But there'll be a lot of our listeners who just love them and revere them and saying, what's wrong with that bloke?
Yeah, well, it's a funny thing because Glennie Tarrant, who's an old retired commercial fisherman, he drove down onto the beach to see how I went. And he come down and he said, how'd you go, Stinker? Did you catch anything? And I said, have a look in that esky, I said. And if their tails are hanging that one end. He said, oh, he said, I haven't had a feed of fish for ages. I said, do you like kingies? He said, yeah. I said, well, here, take these. So he took the biggest one. And then I dropped another one. So I spread them out around Fingal Bay because there are people here who really enjoy them. They prefer them. They think they're the best of the lot. Well, I catch them for them, really. I just say, yeah, well, I'll take your word for it, but you're welcome to them. So the kingies went to a nice home anyway.
That's good, but they're nowhere near as good as a nice snapper. I think most of our listeners would agree with you, Stinker, but horses for courses, or in this case, kingfish. Tight lines, buddy.
Hey, Scott.
The Big Fish on ABC Radio.
It's The Big Fish, and as you can hear from the lapping of the water on the sides of the big aluminium vessel, it's Craig McGill on Sydney Harbour. Good morning, Craig.
Good morning, mate. How you doing?
Yes, I can hear the waves lapping there on your very solid boat that's built like a battleship. I think it came out of Garden Island, didn't it?
It is. Yeah, no, it's five mil plate.
Yeah, it'd take a torpedo strike and still stay up.
It would.
And you've got some folk on board this morning?
I do, mate, yeah. You got three fellas on board, yeah.
Catching any, mate?
Yeah, look, it's been all right. On and off over the last few weeks. Had, you know, funny weather, funny water, good water, bad water, bit of everything, really. And mixed success. So kingies have been sort of on and off. There's been some good flathead. I tell you what, you know, my biggest problem at the moment is actually getting a flathead that's small enough to keep.
All the big monsters.
I know. I'm not joking. I mean, up at on the mud bottom where we fish, it's pretty deep water and we're fishing live baits. We're mostly targeting dewies or kingies, and we just keep getting these massive flathead. I think out of the last 12 flathead we've caught, there's only been one that's been small enough to keep, so under 70.
That's extraordinary, isn't it? Absolutely extraordinary.
And yeah, unless we go up into the moorings. So if we want one to eat now, we head up the back of North Harbour in the moorings there and just, you know, use soft plastics and you're sort of getting them, you know, 40s, 50s up there, which are a good eating size.
Yeah, I think when they're really into the breeding too, which is probably not this time of year, but you'll get a lot of smaller males around those females, but I guess they just all sit together there. It must be a good feeding spot for them.
This spot where we get these big ones, for some reason we just don't seem to get small flathead there at all, even in the breeding season. Just seem to get these big females. I don't know why. You're right. You would think there would be males, and you see that in North Harbour. You know, when you pull up a big flathead there, in the right time of year, there'll be half a dozen males will follow her up. But yeah, we don't seem to get that at this place.
There's some nice habitat around there in North Harbour. Some lovely areas around the spit and sandy spots. Nice sandy spots. Mm. Drop offs. It's good. And I think water clarity plays a big part in soft plasticking for flathead or lure fishing in general. The water clarity of the last couple of weeks, we've had a bit of rain that's murked things up a bit now, but it was really good on the high tide and the fishing was really good to go with it. I guess you do sort of different fishing to that shallow water estuary stuff that I do, but do you notice that?
Yeah, well, I just think the clearer the water, the further they can see. So instead of having to hit them, you know, right on the head with the lure in murky water, you might have a 3 meter radius that they can see the lure. So you just sort of expand your field, really.
And what about the dewies? Have they played the game? Because they're always a welcome bycatch, aren't they? Stinker was just talking about 25 kilo one that snaffled his prawn fishing for snapper the other day. That was a welcome catch for the blokes in the boat next door. His mates, they gaffed it for him and he gave it to them.
No, dewies have been great this year. Nothing really huge, sort of 90. They're sort of topping out at 90. But we tend to get the bigger ones in autumn anyway. But numbers, big numbers, as a result of all those wet years that we've had. Dewies just love breeding in those flood years. We've had so many of them lately. They're good. We're getting them everywhere now, just mostly as bycatcher fishing for other stuff. But they've been fantastic. And getting a lot of tropical stuff too now. Friend sent me a picture of a big spangled emperor that he got up near Bantry Bay in Middle Harbour. We're getting those grinners, you know, the striped lizard fish, I think they're called. We're getting a lot of them at the moment.
Yeah, and, they've got that really huge mouth and they lie on the bottom, sort of like a flathead, but they've got their weird, great big, strange gob.
Yeah, aggressive too, unbelievably aggressive.
Yeah, they can take, they're not a big fish, but they can take a huge hook, can't they? They're all mouth.
Yeah, that's right, yeah. So a lot of them around and, you know, Watson's Leaping Bonito, there's a few of them around the place and yeah, it's good. And the other thing we're seeing this year too that has been a bit lean the last few years is proper bait balls, like, you know, real solid swirling balls of frogmouth pilchards. So that's been good. So the Bonito out here have just been unbelievable this year, particularly in Middle Harbour. But I haven't seen numbers. They're not particularly big, but the numbers of them is just staggering at the moment, which, you know, all ties in. If you've got all those extra bait fish around, I'm sure that's what the bonito have come in for.
If you're a small boat fisher, would just trolling some little lures work for that?
Yeah, I mean, I'd probably cast. It's, you can see them. So it's a matter of just motoring around, you know, anywhere from, say, the Spit to Bantry Bay. And just watch, just see, look, keep an eye out for them. You'll either see the bonito splashing or you'll see the birds on them. But either way, I'd just motor up quietly and just flick small, you know, slices, small metal slices into them.
The tiny little ones, the really small ones?
Yeah, look, to be honest, they haven't been that fussy lately. They're just going crazy, you know, like bonito do when they sort of hit full speed. They'll just eat anything as fast as they can. And, well, I've kept a few for bait and even a few to eat, and you cut them open and they're just gorged with bait, absolutely stuffed. But yeah, but it's good to see that bait making a bit of a comeback, because it has been lean over the last few years.
It's the Big Fish, and with Craig McGill on Sydney Harbour, he's out there at the moment. And do you put a slab of bonito on for a mulloway? Are they enticed by that?
Yep, absolutely. In fact, the last real big one we got last season was on a what I do is I'll fillet the bonito, and then I'll cut, instead of cutting up and taking the fillet off, I'll cut down and leave the head on the fillet. So it's not exactly butterflied, because the other fillet's still on the frame, but it's a fillet with the head still on. And I find that deters the pickers, because the pickers like going to town on those big fillets. But I find leaving the head on seems to sort of slow the pickers down a little bit. I don't know whether they're scared of it or whatever. And yeah, Dewey's love that.
And where would you put the hook? Through the eye or through the nose? Or
no, I'll put it down the tail end of the fillet.
Oh, I see. So you'll have the head at the other end.
Yeah, well, see, if you put the hook up the head end, you sort of lose your hook exposure, because it's so much thicker and harder up there. If you put it down the thin tail end, I just put it through three times, and you've got much better hook exposure. So they'll swallow it head first, and then you've got good hook exposure down the thin end, and yeah, they'll swallow it down like that.
So just, yeah, this is a really interesting, I've never heard of this. This is the McGill method. I've never heard of anyone doing this. So you'll take the spine and one side off and leave a fillet attached to the head.
Yep.
And then that's, you'll put it, the hook through the tail, what, a 5-0 or something?
Yep.
And that's quite a heavy thing too. That would have its own weight, I guess.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, you feel like, yeah, it's certainly, you know, you've got to put a bit of effort into cast it. It's like that bloke on YouTube who casts chickens, you know?
Yeah, so you wouldn't like need, yeah, that's right. So you wouldn't need a lead. You'd just fish it wafting around, would you?
Look, I do. I do use lead, but you could. If you didn't have much current, yeah, absolutely go without lead.
Mm. And that'd be making its own burley trail, wouldn't it, really? With the,
oh, yeah.
It's a lovely oily fish. Wow, yep. That's fascinating. And the Dewey's... Yeah. Joey's like that. Where did you get that idea from?
I don't know, really. And the good thing about it too is that the pickers will still go at it, but it's a big bait, so it takes them a long time to gnaw it down.
Yeah,
so,
that, you know, is a big bait.
So the time that it's out there, I like having pickers around the bait too, because it attracts attention from, you know, from other fish. So big Dewey swimming past sees all these pickers having a go at this thing and thinks, all right, I'm having that, and over they go. So it's a good method.
Big bait, big fish.
Yeah,
Craig.
Well, you know, I've always had this theory. It doesn't matter what you're fishing for, you know, Murray cod, barra, big Deweys. Have a look at the mouth, and the mouth's not there for fun. You know, if it's a massive mouth, it's because happily eat big baits.
Is that a reel going in the background? You might have to go back to work and catch a fish with these blokes. I'm sure I heard a drag going on a reel then.
You know what it is? It's a chainsaw. over in Northbridge.
Okay. Yes. Yeah. Good morning, Sydney.
It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter where you are on this harbour. There is always a power tool in the background, or a rock hammer, or there's always a noise. In fact, there's two here. There's a leaf blower on one side of the valley and a chainsaw on the other side. So.
The mongrel neighbour.
Yeah.
This time of the morning. Hey, tight lines, mate. I hope you get into them. And thanks for sharing that really great Jewfish bait, the mulloway bait of a filleted head-on Bonito.
No worries, mate.
Tight lines.
See you, mate.
Craig McGill there on Sydney Harbour.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. You can discover more ABC podcasts, live radio and exclusives on the ABC Listener.